1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And as usual, 51551 is our text number. Let me go to Anne Crossey with a remarkable story. Anne, good afternoon.
Hello.
How are you?
Very good, thank you.
When did you discover that your father was not your father, so to speak?
So it would have been 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I found out, bizarrely, from an astrologer who told me, your mother has a secret and it's time you knew what it was. And when I talked to my mum about it, mm-hmm. she said, your dad had been infertile and wasn't able to have children, and you were a donor-conceived baby.
Okay. And that would have been a couple of decades ago, would it, Anne?
So I was born... My parents were from Northern Ireland,
yeah.
But they moved to South Africa okay. when they got married, and I was born there in 1975.
Okay. So was that unusual at the time to for donors to be available, sperm donors? Possibly
yes.
was. Okay.
yes.
Now the plot thickens. You then, take us on your journey then.
Okay, my dad, I had been very close to my dad.
Yeah.
And he had died in an accident in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
So, which in a way probably was a blessing in disguise, really, because I think it would have been very hard for him, me finding out. But my mum told me I was donor conceived.
Yeah.
And she said, since I'm telling you this, I might as well tell you that I think the doctor was the donor.
Mm-hmm. And what had she been originally told?
So she was told at the time that it was a young medical student.
Okay. That the doctor who ran the clinic was drawing donations, so to speak, from different people.
Yeah, so right. he died in 1977.
And the doctor was Tony Walker.
Yeah, the okay. doctor died in 1977. And my mum went back to the clinic
yeah.
to see if she could get records.
Right.
In case she wanted to have another baby.
Mm-hmm.
And the receptionist told her that the doctor had been the only doctor, the only donor, sorry, at the clinic.
So there was no, his sperm that was inseminating every woman.
Well, that's what we thought.
Yeah, okay.
So he had treated hundreds of women
yeah.
at this clinic.
Okay.
So I grew up an only child,
mm.
so my first reaction was to try and find the others, try and find my brothers and sisters.
Your donor siblings?
Yes.
Okay. Who? There's a phrase that's used in the literature at the moment. Donor siblings are called dibblings. How do you react when you hear that, Anne? It's an unusual phrase, is it?
I think a lot of the terminology around donor conception is quite difficult.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a sense in which dibblings is sort of belittling
yeah,
or
yeah.
infantilizing mm. The relationship, which is someone who's actually your half-brother or sister.
Yeah. It sounds like something out of a cartoon or something, dibblings. But anyway, that's the phrase I keep reading in all the literature, but as you say, donor siblings wouldn't be all that happy with it. So Tony Walker, who ran the clinic, the allegation is that all the women who were impregnated, so to speak, who became pregnant because of the donation of sperm, not everyone became pregnant, I presume, they then discovered that there was only one father, so to speak, and it was the man who ran the clinic, the medic who ran the clinic. That was the allegation.
Yeah, so what happened was, obviously, I mean, in South Africa at the time, there were no records kept,
yeah.
But he had written a couple of books under a pseudonym.
Mm-hmm.
So on the little bit where you can write something on Amazon, I wrote, I was born at Dr. Walker's clinic. He was running a fertility clinic. I believe he was my father.
Yeah.
So about a few years later, I got an email from someone saying, hello there, I grew up with Dr. Walker as my godfather,
mm-hmm.
But having read your message, I spoke to my mum, and it turns out she'd come from the clinic too. The mother didn't know it was the doctor, but she said, I'm your half-sibling.
Okay.
So gradually then we find some more. Mm-hmm. And over a period of years, and I think there's 10 or 12 of us, but we all decided to meet in Australia last summer.
Okay.
And before we went, we live all over the world, in Australia and California. But before we went, we decided to do DNA tests.
Yep.
So we all did DNA tests, and we found out that all of the rest of them were from the doctor, and I wasn't.
Wow.
So he was actually using some other donors as well.
So you, well, okay, keep going. I presume then you tried to find out who the other donor was, who your father is or was.
Yes.
Okay.
So how I explain it to people, I was okay with it, really, when I thought it was the doctor. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, I know there's a lot of scandals around that now, but I think in this case, he genuinely meant well. You know, this was before the fertility industry became a massive thing. But I think when I thought I had an answer, it was okay. But when that answer was taken away and I was just left with a blank, you're really driven to find out where you come from.
So at the opening of an envelope to get your DNA test, you discovered that the 10 or 12 half-siblings that you thought you had, donor siblings, that they were gone.
Yes. Yes, it was very upsetting. I think that was probably even more upsetting than finding out in the first place.
Yeah. Because, as you say, you're an only child, therefore when you opened that envelope and discovered that in the discussions that you weren't the daughter of Tony Walker, so to speak, the people that you thought you had eventually found as half siblings, they're no longer half siblings.
No.
How did you react to that?
Well, I mean, we had our trip. Myself and my children, we had our trip already planned to go to Australia to meet them all.
Okay.
So then we had to make a decision: do we still go? And I was very aware that they were all meeting for the first time as biological siblings, you know, so I didn't want to, I didn't want to
crash the party,
but yeah. They all insisted that I came along. I'd been in contact with them for a couple of years at that stage, so we've stayed in touch and we're still very close, and we went to Australia and had a super time.
And did you learn anything else about this whole situation, how it evolved and how many others might be half siblings, not yourself, obviously, but maybe there are half siblings from that clinic as well, if he used the sperm of that donor more than once?
Yes, very possibly.
Yeah.
Very possibly. And also, apparently, he tended to use men whose wives had had healthy babies at his clinic. So, I mean, I almost certainly have brothers and sisters.
But where do you go to find them?
So it's very complicated.
Yeah.
The DNA tests show you everybody that you're related to who have done DNA tests.
Of course, yeah.
So it came up, so I have a whole lot of fourth and fifth cousins.
Right.
My mum very kindly did a DNA test for me as well,
okay,
so that I could X off anyone who was related to her. So I isolated everyone on the paternal side, and then it's a case of it's like working out a jigsaw puzzle or something, working out who shared ancestors with people that you're related to. So you find people in the past that you will have come from.
Mm-hmm.
So for me,
yeah,
one of them was a man born in 1785. Another one was born in 1666. And then you start following family trees to try to find out where these lines meet.
So where have you traced your DNA back to? South Africa, Ireland, Northern Ireland, where?
One of these men was Richard Hulley, who lived in Bandon. I live in West Cork, so it's that's quite nice to know. And his wife, Anne Brangan, they were from Bandon and Bear Island. And they went out to South Africa in 1820. So another crowd then were French, and they went out in the 1700s.
Okay. Are you any closer to finding out any more of your donor siblings?
Yeah, well, I think I might have found where I came from. I think it's one of two brothers. One of them died, I think, in 1980. But I've been in contact with his son, mm-hmm. And he's actually everyone I've reached out to has been really very nice and very encouraging and open to, you know, doing DNA tests and helping me as much as they can. I know a lot of donor-conceived people haven't had that experience. But getting DNA tests in and out of South Africa is very difficult.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Because I think they're treated as body parts or something. So
when you were, when you say you've located two brothers, is that in South Africa you're talking about?
Yes. In South
okay.
Africa.
So the donation you reckon was from either a friend of Dr. Walker or somebody who was was attending the clinic, who's, as you said, use the phrase, his wife would have had a healthy baby.
Yes.
Now, in Ireland, you can still have an anonymous donor, can't you?
So I think things have changed in the past week.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, Simon Harris met with all representatives from the entire fertility industry last week. Mm-hmm. And the law is, it hasn't been commenced yet, but it's coming into effect, hopefully, this October. But I know that fertility clinics here are now no longer accepting anonymous sperm donors.
And do you reckon there are many children, so to speak, well, adult children as well, in Ireland who are donor children, so to speak?
Yes.
And is there a group? Do you have any contact with them? Or
We are everywhere. In Ireland at the moment, I think things are changing probably because of gay and lesbian couples.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they're having children now, it's obvious that a donor's been used. But traditionally, where heterosexual couples were using a donor because there was an issue with fertility, I think a lot of them made the decision just never to tell the child where they came from. So I think they think only 6% of donor-conceived people know that they're donor-conceived.
But Anne, I suspect from listening to you that you are in a position to make a judgment without upset, though I suspect you have gone through upset. Are you glad you found out?
Yes.
Okay.
And I mean, in a way, I think anyone that's living with a big secret in their life, even if you don't know what it is, it's there. You know, so when I found out, a lot of things made sense, and nothing that I could actually specifically point to, but it made sense of a lot of my childhood. I think it's quite common for donor-conceived people just to feel they don't quite fit into the family unit somehow.
Mm. So you're glad you found out. You're glad you found out.
I'm glad I found out. I do think though there should be no secrecy around it. I think there shouldn't be a finding out for people in this situation. They should know all along. You know, there shouldn't be a.
So on mature reflection, when do you think your parents should have told you before you went to the astrologer and said your mother's holding a secret? Do you think your mother should have told you when you were a teenager, when you were 18, 21?
I think it was a very different time then.
Yeah.
I think they never expected DNA testing to become a thing. You know, the whole adoption scandal hadn't really erupted. You know, I think at the time they thought it was fine just to say nothing. And there was also a huge shame around male infertility. So I suppose that's part of why it was kept secret as well. But I think, really, in this day and age, there should be no secrets around it at all.
Was it unusual? Because there's a story in the Journal of Canada, the doctor's license revoked for using his own sperm to inseminate patients, which happened not in your case, but in a lot of cases, it seems, in that clinic that Tony Walker was using. Was he using his own sperm to save money, or he has a God complex?
I think it's very common, actually, for doctors to use their own sperm. There are a lot of cases that are coming out all over the world where this is happening. As to what the motivation was, I don't know. I could not speculate. I would only say that, obviously it's a huge breach of trust on the part of the patient, and it is the child then who will carry that onwards. You know, the child will carry then the doctor's DNA, they'll pass it to their children, their grandchildren.
Okay, did you see the story on the journal.ie? Canada doctor's license revoked for using own sperm to inseminate patients. From just looking at one of the comments, you know, it's an online newspaper, very popular, and I suppose one of the things people like you can comment. But this is one of the comments, Anne, if it made yesterday. As a philosopher and donor-conceived person, I can tell you straight up that your argument is absurd. Nobody else is dehumanised in the way that donor-conceived people are. We are artificially created like farm animals. Half of our life is essentially purchased. We have no rights to know where we came from or our medical history, or brothers or sisters. And no, telling us that we should be grateful is not interesting. It's insulting. What this doctor did is, in my opinion, sexual assault. It is certainly a serious ethical breach. Would you tell the product of rape that they should be grateful to exist? I thought for 10 years that the doctor had been my donor. It turns out he wasn't. But he did father many of the babies coming from his clinic. This is Canada. That doesn't just affect the parents, and the child now has half his DNA. She will pass his DNA onto her children and grandchildren. The whole billion-dollar industry is riddled with ethical questions more pressing than the kids should be grateful to be alive. Thank you. How would you reflect on that, Anne?
I think this is something that that we're told a lot. If we raise any criticisms about the fertility industry, we're told that we should be grateful to be alive. We're also told that we must have been really, really wanted. It was different at the time when I was conceived, but now, you know, the industry has mushroomed.
Well, how do you react to the really, 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 really wanted line? You must have been.
You must have been really, really wanted. Yeah. Well, I think that can be a double-edged sword as well.
Tell us how.
You know, these children are really wanted.
Yeah, obviously, your mother decided, because of the situation with your father, that they wanted a child so much that they would go to this fertility clinic.
Yes.
In the mid-1970s.
And so they go now. People now... my parents did not pay for the treatment. There was no charge. But nowadays, people pay a lot of money for half the child, really. In all the material that comes from the clinics, what you see are these, you know, a cute baby on the cover, you know, a beautiful baby. But there isn't really any thought given to that baby growing up, that baby will become an adult, and I think I mean from my perspective, I think the industry profits out of people's infertility and people's desire to have a baby. You know, the industry is there for profit, and yeah, I agree. I think there are a lot of ethical questions around it.
And it's an industry that's getting bigger and bigger, and it's an industry that a lot of people believe they have been enormously helped by.
Yes, The parents, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah? But yes, the parents were able to...
But that contributor there talks about this billion, because a lot of money in it, it's extraordinarily expensive. IVF treatment now is extraordinarily expensive, isn't it?
Yes. I think what I was saying there was the double-edged sword aspect. I think when so much expense has gone... I mean, even that is quite a strange thing to know for children now growing up, knowing that the expense, you know, knowing how much they cost, basically. There is something about the commodification of human life in that. But also, the parents can have very high expectations when they've spent so much money and gone to so much trouble about what exactly it is they're getting. I think sometimes lost in that is the fact that they are getting a real person who's going to grow up into a real adult. You know, it's not just a cute little baby they're getting that is going to complete their life and make everything okay. So I think sometimes there can be a lot of pressure comes onto the child.
Yeah, yeah. And in your case, an only child. Stay with us, Anne. And this is Anne Crossy, 51551, joe@rt.ie. Anne Kyo, Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Anne Crossy made a point that Simon Harris said they will change the law, but there's no to outlaw anonymous donation of sperm. You're very strong on this, that it should have been outlawed a long time ago.
Absolutely.
Why?
Absolutely. Well, because, first of all, they have. I understand that either the law has been passed but not implemented,
yeah,
or that it is being considered. But either way, it should have been introduced a long time ago. Because today, we understand fully,
okay,
and everybody knows the importance of knowing your genetic inheritance, knowing what,
yeah,
what illnesses your parents or your grandparents or whatever have had, and what effect that might have or the implications that might have for you. For instance, you might be able to avoid a life-threatening illness by knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
But a whole cohort of people are being born in this country and in some other countries. Now, some countries have banned anonymous donation. But a whole cohort of people are being born today and have been born in the last 20 years or whatever, and they do not know who their biological father is, or there are sometimes their biological mother, because they have been anonymously conceived.
And what is written on the on the birth cert?
Well, I'm not sure.
There's no mention of the donor.
There's no mention at all. There is no need for the father's name to appear on the birth cert. Now, again, that's a law that has been passed, but it has not been implemented.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, we all deplore the things, the woes of the past. And we've heard our government leaders talking about dark chapters in our history. But we are writing our own dark chapters today when we do not make sure that there is no anonymous donation. We are depriving the young people of today who are anonymously conceived of knowing what may in fact save their lives. So there couldn't be anything worse than that.
I'm crossing it.
We can say about years ago is that at least we weren't aware of that. People weren't aware of the huge importance of genes in disease. But we are aware today, and yet we're doing nothing about it.
And
you know, that is hypocrisy.
And last week, Simon Harris, I understand, met with representatives from the entire fertility industry to talk to them about the legislation. As far as I know, he hasn't met with any adult donor-conceived people to discuss it. So, you know, when we look back, the sperm now is being brought in from Denmark and Spain into Ireland. So, you know, you have to wonder, is this really so different to the adoption scandal when Irish babies were being sold off to America.
Precisely. That is exactly my point.
And is there, and insofar as you can say, is there unanimity among the donor community, sorry, the children of donors community, insofar as there is a community, would everyone agree, yes, the biological father's name should be on my birth cert? Even if he is a student from Denmark that no one has ever met.
Yes, well, I imagine that if they were aware of the importance of their genetic history to themselves, yes, they would want it. But you probably are familiar with the case, I think it was in Holland or somewhere recently, where a manager or an owner of a fertility clinic was pretending that he was providing anonymous sperm. But in point of fact, he was providing his own.
Yes. Well,
to hundreds of people. Now those children are all claiming a chunk of his inheritance, and rightly so.
And also,
so is that what we want happening here too?
And it's a very dangerous thing to do, and diluting the gene pool like that. Who knows if they're marrying
it? Precisely so. So, I mean, we have regulation in everything now, but not, you know, seemingly no urgency about regulating this. And I'm wondering, just is it because the owners of fertility clinics and the interested parties are opposed to it?
Okay.
But I think, though, it merits highlighting in the media. And I thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Okay, stay there, Anne. Kevin, 5-1-double, your point, please, Kevin.
I'm just wondering, Joe, would this be having to announce to get rid of the anonymity, what does it lead to? Designer babies, type of catalogue babies, if you will.
But that's already happening.
It's not, because the law at the moment is that the donor is anonymous. I'm saying that if the donor is not anonymous, that can the person who wishes to have a baby select the person that they want to get the sperm from, and therefore create a designer baby.
There are already Tinder-like apps that people use to choose sperm donors.
I understand
there are also ones that are only for example, people who are members of Mensa. And these would be more exclusive, and they cost more money.
But Kevin, as Anne Crossy is pointing out, and indeed Anne Keogh, the donations, the sperm in Irish fertility clinics, in a lot of cases, is brought in from other countries.
But my point is that at the moment it's anonymous.
Yeah.
That if it becomes that the fact is that it's not anonymous, that you can choose your parent or choose your sperm. You're choosing your parent, therefore you're making a designer baby moving forward. Catalogue buying.
But hang on, who would you be choosing as your parent? How would you choose them?
Well, you know, let's say tall, blonde, blue-eyed, 6'2". I don't mean to be flippant about it.
No, you're not. You're making the point.
I'm just saying that, you know, that if it becomes legal in the next few weeks, that you now must know the donor of the baby. Then you have choice to get that donor, and you could choose to pick a donor that suits you, if you know what I mean.
I'm talking about a legal point of view.
I'm not talking about Tinder. I know it exists. I'm not a fool. But I'm just saying that if Simon brings in this law, that it suddenly is that you must now know that it could lead to you saying, well, I don't want that person, but I will have that person. And I just see a small problem, moral problem around that.
Okay, Anne Crossy, sorry, you wanted to come in.
I
just wanted to say that that's already happening to an extent. Most open ID donors, people don't actually know who they are until the child turns 18. They have the right to know where they came from. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really make it, what you're saying, it doesn't make a difference whether it's anonymous or not. People are still given a list of characteristics of the person. So it's already
okay.
like that. You do make a very good point, but that's okay. already happening.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Kevin, and thanks for raising that point. Okay, and Cody, you want to make a final point there?
Yes, please. My point is that how do you know that you're going to get what you have ordered? Okay. the guy in Holland, he was telling them that they were having PhD students and whatever, and that their children would be geniuses. And it turned out that they were all themselves. He was the father of 300 odd brothers and sisters around the world.
Okay.
We're now claiming his inheritance.
Okay. Anne Coe, thanks indeed. And Anne Crossy, kind regards, Anne, to you and indeed your family. That's Anne Crossy. 51551 Joe at rte.ie.